Welcome to the Strong Men, Strong Marriages podcast. Here we are on a mission to get strong, get attractive, and get the marriage of our dreams. I'm your host, Mike Frazier. Let's do this. All right, men, welcome to today's episode of Strong Men, Strong Marriages. Really excited today about our topic. I'm here with Jason Sani. He's from a podcast called The Manhood Experiment, where we're doing the same kind of things, trying to help guys have better lives overall. Jason's an expert in the health area, and we don't talk a lot about this here, but it's something that, I think we're all interested in. And today we're going to be talking about, energy, testosterone, and I'm excited for it. Welcome, Jason.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here and to be a resource in any way possible. So I think there's a lot of crossover, with what we do, talking about, just all things self-development and, health and relationships. It's, it's all connected.
Yeah, totally. Totally. So if you could just tell us a little bit about your background and kind of your expertise around this topic about health and energy and hormones and all that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think starting out all my life, I've been, extremely passionate and obsessed with health one way or another. I either wanted to be a professional athlete or work in sports in some nature. And, I pursued that route, ended up becoming a nutritionist. And, so I got to dabble in some of the sports medicine and nutrition side of things. So I've been working as a nutritionist and trainer for more than 14 years since this case. And so from a history of working with one-on-one clients, working with in the athletics field, partnering with physicians, published a book called Making Healthy Taste Good, which is all about stripping away intimidation when it comes to to preparing foods in a more nourishing manner, hosting workshops on a variety of different topics, and started a few fitness businesses, one which I'm pretty heavily involved with currently. But a father of one toddler daughter. So for those of you have been through the toddler stage, you probably know what that's like. And so just doing my part to spread a good message and see what we can do to empower people to live more energetic and better lifestyles.
Yeah, awesome. Love it. So toddler daughter, how old right now?
She's almost 17 months.
Okay. So yeah, super little.
That's a great time. You have a couple of children?
We have five. Yeah. So oldest is 17, youngest is 6. It's fun. It's busy. But energy idea is important to me of how to keep up my energy. Maybe we can just dive in. Also, I was looking up, so the company you're kind of more involved in right now, I think it is Ohm Fitness, right? OHM Fitness. Yeah. Yeah, took a quick look at it online. It looks awesome, unique kind of thing here. So if you guys want to check that out, OHM, Ohm Fitness, super cool.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I do have to start off by saying, for those of you who don't get to see, Dr. Mike, I mean, for having five kids, this is pretty impressive. Obviously, you got a formula for managing your energy and your lifestyle habits. I commend you for, you're doing something right.
Well, hey, I appreciate that. I do some things to try to keep myself in good physical shape, but always looking to learn, right? But so, yeah, I guess maybe to start off, why don't we just start kind of with overall energy? I'm a big believer in the Pareto principle, 80-20, 20% of your effort gets 80% of results. So, I turned 41 this year, and, kind of longevity and all that's a little more on my mind now than maybe in the past. For you and kind of what you've studied, just to kind of optimize, I guess for me, it's, just the physical awareness, like cognitive alertness, during the day, especially when I'm working, being able to do well with my workouts, just play with the kids and do that kind of thing through the day. So, with those kind of goals in mind, what are the like biggest, the 20%, right? That's going to get me.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's a good question. It's a good topic where I think we all, you know, energy is the main metric. If we can improve and manage our energy, I think we can show up better in all areas of life, from our relationships to, you know, our health and how we express the best version of ourselves through business, you know, and so on. And so when it comes to, you know, energy, I always break down the fundamentals, and they're not always the sexiest things, because I think a lot of people are seeking these magic bullets that can make this significant difference. But a lot of times the needle movers are the fundamentals. And what the fundamentals are to me are, you know, it typically it's the big three of movement, you know, nutrition and stress and energy management, which I think is a big factor, is sleep and recovery. And so I like to also throw in, you know, purpose. I think what we do, if we're purpose driven, if we're doing stuff that we enjoy, we're not fighting against like a constant internal conflict, we're going to show up with more energy as well. I mean, just the factor that the discipline, you know, is something that's on limited supply. And if we're forcing ourselves to do something and we're not really into it, our energy is going to be depleted a lot faster as well.
Absolutely.
So when it comes to, you know, in my opinion, the 20% factor that we really have the most control of, if we were going to start with these things, are, you know, movement. And so when we talk about, I think it's kind of like a use it or lose it mentality that I like to stand behind. But if we think that we need an adequate amount of movement, and I like to say training rather than exercise or fitness, and obviously it can be considered the same thing. But when we're training for life, when we're training for something, when we're training to show up, you know, you signed up for a competition, a race, or, you know, it could be an obstacle course race or a triathlon, or to go climb a large mountain, it gives you more purpose. It's more likely you'll stick with it. And that's what you're doing. You're training. And like you said, a topic that has become of more importance, I think, as you've gotten a little bit older here, is this idea of longevity. And I subscribe to the idea of, you know, health span and quality rather than specifically just, you know, the length of the life that we live. We want to live a life where, you know, it has quality. In our 60s and 70s and 80s, we still can, you know, pick things up over our heads. If we don't have to be concerned of falling down and not being able to get back up, and, you know, some of this basic. So movement, major. Next one, nutrition. And, you know, I think a lot of us know what we need to do. It's a difference of having those good intentions and bridging that gap. And I think the basics, I stand by the crowding in the positive things, like focus on, you know, eating the diet that's more whole foods and limiting the processed foods. So by crowding in more of the whole foods, fruits and vegetables, seasonal fruits and vegetables, and, you know, the you know, responsibly sourced, you know, proteins, and that could be, you know, beef or chicken or fish or whatever. And people are going to have their preferences here, but most people are going to do a lot better if they're making, just like we said, the 80-20, if they can get at least 80% of their diet to be whole foods and prioritizing that. And obviously we can go really deep down that, but your energy is absolutely associated with the fuel that you're providing yourself. If you're trying to do too much activity and you don't have enough fuel, you're going to run into an issue. At the same time, if you're over feeding yourself, over consuming, your body's going to be bogged down. Your digestive system is going to be overwhelmed. And then recovery is essential as well. So we think that you need to train, or I'm sorry, you need to recover as hard as you train, as hard as you play. And within recovery, I think of that as stress management. Stress management and energy management are tightly related, but you need to have your times in the day, in the week, that you're able to unplug. You're either doing something that you enjoy, you can take a deep breath, you can relax, and or you're setting yourself up to at least get that rejuvenative type of sleep. And the difference is, you could be an overachiever, you know, working out all the time, eating great, but if you're burning, you know, the candle on both sides, or that whole saying, like if you're staying up too late, you're not giving yourself the opportunity to be able to recover and have that rest. And that's going to affect hormones and energy and so on. And with all of those, it's having purpose, I think. And I think having purpose gives you clarity, gives you confidence. and it allows you to show up so much more. So I'm happy to dive into any examples with those topics. But I think right now there's this idea that everyone, we need, you know, two or three coffees a day and stimulants, and we're already overstimulated, and that's where the rest and recovery thing really plays into the whole key here. But a lot of times we just need to learn how to manage the energy that we have a lot better, rather than looking for this extrinsic source or this exogenous source of stimulants that we often rely on.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about testosterone in a minute here too. And you know, coming from the medical school and the medical background, right? We've got this whole system that produces testosterone in our body, right? And so, you know, what I believe with that approach, and it's probably the same thing with energy, right? Like we've got it. You know, our body has ways to produce that. It's more about supporting our body's own way to do that. Between diet and rest and all that, versus like, because again, we're going to talk about testosterone. I think it's just a good example. Like, if you just give your body testosterone, it just shuts down that whole system that produces it, because your body's like, that's the end product, right? And so the feedback loop to your brain is stop making it. So anyway, with, yeah, so what came to my mind with that? So, you know, training, nutrition, rest and recovery, you know, sleep being an important part of that. I think what was interesting to me was you talking about, you know, these other kind of stress management techniques. So like, as I've been going to therapy this past, you know, few months, and like, we're doing inner child work for some of that, of kind of like, you know, tuning into 6-year-old me or like 2-year-old me. And, So like for Christmas, I buy myself this remote control car for little Mikey, you know, my younger self. And it's been like really powerful to just go take that car out and just go drive it around. And, like you're saying, unplug, it would not have been something that would have been on my radar at all before doing that. But maybe just as a, you know, tip for you guys out there, you know, if you can think back to stuff you did as a young kid that was just fun, right? You just enjoyed it. You know, that can be something you can plug in there. It doesn't have to be, or maybe it is playing a sport. Maybe that's fun for you, but it doesn't always have to be that kind of thing.
Yeah, there's something to add with that. I think that like what I'm picking up from what you're saying, and it is what I mean, is it's a source of play. It's a source of, you can blend in a few of those activities that are those big difference makers as far as like movement and activity. If you can blend that in with play, it's that much better, because then it doesn't feel like an obligation. So for example, you know, I love to surf. I love to get outside and run and just be outside. And I feel like that does remind me of my childhood. We live near a park. I go shoot, you know, play some basketball or play some pickup basketball. That reminds me of childhood. And I think that when you're in that sense of play, you're able to escape this feeling of you know, the future or the past, anxiety or the depression type of thing. You're able to just to really be in the moment. And I think you can explore different ideas like flow, and there's a lot of different, you know, there's a lot of research being done on like the effect this has psychologically and physiologically when we're doing something that we truly enjoy. And you can think of something where time just kind of stops. And so it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to go work out, but doing something that is playful needs to be a priority. And you know, and it's, so when we look and break down all these big factors, like what I like to suggest is take a look at the big three: just nutrition, you know, movement, and your stress management, which, you know, your recovery and sleep is going to fall into, and rate it from a 1 out of 5 and be honest with yourself. And you know, if we were to add that up, and you know, maybe you had a 3 out of 5 in one department and a 4 out of 5 in another one, or 5 out of 5, you're averaging out closer to like a B average. And I don't think any of us want to live that B average. And it's all up to us to be able to make those different changes. And it will be really obvious. For example, if you have digestive issues and you eat and it interrupts your sleep, or you know, it just drains your energy, I think we know that you have a leak of energy there. And by us addressing that, it's going to allow us to to have so much more energy for these other departments. It's the same thing as we mentioned with the lack of sleep and the recovery. And again, it might not necessarily, we might not be able to add more sleep, but we can improve the quality of it. And if you don't, if you feel like that is already, you know, like you've done pretty well in that department, can you take a break in the middle of the day and just focus on breath to be able to get into that parasympathetic and calm down that over anxious nervous system that we have from just being overstimulated with notifications and so on. So those factors are all so closely related. And that's when I talk about energy management often is stress management, you know, and the perception of how we're looking at those things, I think makes a big difference.
Yeah. Awesome. So great. So yeah, I think that's good for the energy side of things. Here's one quick question I have for you. You know, yeah. I've heard, you know, and tried different things as far as like quality, you mentioned quality of sleep. So any like couple things like big movers for helping people improve their quality of sleep?
Yeah, I'm a major nerd about all the sleep stuff. I've read at least 3 books on sleep, which is crazy. I read a whole book, you know, 300 plus pages just on sleep, like multiple. And then I've tested a lot of things out myself. But for me, I mean, I'll just give an example. I might be a little bit extreme, but, you know, it could be a nose strip if you feel like you possibly snore to open up your breathing pathway, because a lot of us are mouth breathers. And, you know, you want to be a nasal breather. We were designed to breathe out of our nose. It filters the air. It helps release nitric oxide into our brain. And you're getting a deeper breath, it's more likely you'd have everything from blood pressure issues to elevated stress just if you're a mouth breather, because it's shallower breathing. I do mouth tape sometimes to actually, I put a little piece of medical tape over my lip, not like a massive one, but just to encourage myself to keep my mouth, you know, closed so that I breathe out of my nose. A cold, dark room has been proven. So there's a lot of data to support, you know, you want to limit the amount of light, you know, while you're sleeping, it's more likely to, you know, to wake you up throughout the night. And so I'll wear an eye mask most of the time, especially if I'm traveling and I can't control the darkness. And then the temperature is really key as well. Like we tend to be more restless as humans. And again, your wife and your sleep preferences may vary like ours do. But you can do different things like have a fan or a humidifier next to your side of the bed. So the temperature thing is huge. If you're restless, you're probably gonna get good quality sleep. And so I think quality and quantity is really important. Just because you are in bed for 8 hours doesn't mean that you're getting that deep, quality, restorative type of sleep, which impacts your insulin sensitivity. So that's gonna impact your cravings and your blood sugar, and that's gonna impact your hormones like your testosterone, your willpower, and decision making, all because of sleep. So I think what I would say is, if you feel like you're not optimized in sleep, it's worth exploring. And for me, I'll just give like one of the biggest recent needle movers was I did a challenge where I was trying to stop eating by 7 p.m. every night for 30 days. And my sleep improved. And I was able to, I could track that. It was measurable because my body wasn't competing with, you know, my digestion. You know, I was able to get into sleep. My body wasn't awake trying to break down the foods. And so, you know, it was less likely that my body temperature was elevated because of the digestion from my food. And I was ready just to go down, and I didn't have, you know, that heavy feeling on my stomach as well. So there's a handful that I think are measurable. You can, you know, have curfews to caffeine and, you know, screens. I think that's a big thing is caffeine has a half-life of, I think like 9 or 10 hours, some people maybe think a little bit longer. So if you have that coffee at lunch, you know, you might not think that it affects you, but you'll still have a little bit of a racing mind. And I think we all know the feeling of waking up in the middle of the night and you're thinking about stuff that you need to do or whatever. And, you know, and that's competing with your restorative sleep, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Sounds good. Those are some great tips. So let's move on to, you know, testosterone. So on the mind of a lot of guys, especially as we age, you know, it kind of naturally starts going down a little bit over time. So my interest in this came from, I just wanted to check it out. You know, it was like on my mind. So, you know, I got it tested. Mine came back. It's normal, like right in the middle, like normal is like 300 to 900. Mine was like 100 something, right? So right in the middle. But my free testosterone was actually low. And so I was like, you know, what's the deal with that? What's going on? I did some research on it, but yeah, so I'm interested in that question in particular from a personal level, like what might be causing that or what. But maybe if you could just start us off with just kind of an overview of, you know, testosterone, what it's doing in our bodies, you know, what you know, what we might see if it's running low.
Yeah, absolutely. Testosterone's a major topic. So, you know, it often gets stereotyped as this anabolic hormone that is for muscle building and, you know, an aggressive, you know, attitudes and this alpha male type of stereotype, which, you know, it plays a role in all of those things, certainly. But testosterone is absolutely essential for, you know, maintaining lean muscle mass on our bodies, playing a role in protein synthesis. So taking the food that we eat and actually converting it into muscle, it affects our mood and like our neurotransmitters. It, you know, testosterone actually, when you have healthy to, you know, higher levels of testosterone, you can view a challenge or an obstacle as something that's more enjoyable. When we have really low testosterone, a challenge can be almost debilitating because of the effect that it has on just your energy production alone. Fat loss as well. So testosterone, when it's low, tends to, you know, allow more, you know, adipose tissue to be able to accumulate in the body. And the cycle with that is unfortunate, is if you have extra adipose tissue in the body, you tend to have lower testosterone because it can affect your hormones in that way. Energy, overall fitness, and then it's related, you know, there's a correlation between, you know, even relationships. You know, it's a topic we're talking about a little bit here, but, you know, testosterone plays a role with libido, I think, as most people could imagine. But people can find themselves withdrawn if they have lower testosterone, they're overstressed. And so we can dive into that and talk about what we look for. And because I want to make sure everybody gets a lot of value, like when it comes to testosterone, you know, different, you know, there's some dictators that how you can determine if your testosterone is lower is, you know, the first thing is look for symptoms. Second thing would be getting testing. I recommend, you know, to get a baseline as early as possible. So if you're listening to this, even if you're in your early 20s, like if you can get a baseline when you feel like you're at your prime, because testosterone tends to be, you know, in your prime through, you know, it varies a little bit, or, you know, early 20s all the way to late 20s and early 30s, and it tends to decline a little bit. But if you can get a baseline when you're, say, let's say 22 or 25, you now can compare that when you're 35, 40, 45, and you have something to be able to compare how you felt in different areas of your life. Because, you know, based on your genetic profile and your lifestyle, like you may thrive at a different level than somebody else. And I don't want to overcomplicate that, but where I'm going with all that is, you know, get tested. And it's as simple as, you know, once I turned, I don't know, I think I started when I was like 32. I was like, I don't know, my insurance covered it. So I did annual blood work and I just was curious to see, you know, what my lipid profiles were, my testosterone, cortisol, all those things, just to make sure that they were in check. And then throughout the years, I've been able to see, you know, if I've had elevated stress in my life or I was going through something, how that could influence my testosterone. You know, when we were trying to have a baby, we were looking to make sure that all the levels were good. And so now it's just something that I do at least annually. Sometimes I'll just throw it in there with, I'm getting a checkup for something else. But that allows us to see where our, you know, again, our baseline is at. And you know that testosterone, if you're thinking of symptoms, like the common things, the most common thing would be a really low libido. Like, if you're waking up, you don't have that morning wood type of feeling, or you don't have that desire, that is a sign that there could be some issues. It's not always 100% determined that way, but that certainly is a factor, especially if you're in a relationship. There's obviously could be a number of different intimacy issues, but that's a big factor. And if your energy is low, you have brain fog. The crazy thing is, I mean, these also could be other symptoms for just not taking care of your lifestyle. Right. I think we all know that. And that's the common issue that I see right now, is there's so many people rushing into, like, you know, the band-aid issue of seeking out exogenous testosterone or hormone replacement therapy which you see all over online, and it's been easier ever to get. So it's worth checking in on, and I always stand by doing whatever you can to fix any of the slow leaks prior to going in and just seeking, you know, hormone replacement or something like that. And yep. As you can imagine, there's a lot of reasons for that. Once you switch over and you decide to go, you know, on hormone replacement, it doesn't mean you're on it for life, but it's very likely that you will be, like, as you switch over to the, you know, the exogenous form, like another outside form of hormone replacement, your body does, you know, realize that it doesn't need to produce it on its own. And so it does shut down. And you can kind of restart it over time with a lot of work. Like, people will do it, kind of come on and off, but it certainly gets more challenging as we age. And I think the moral of the story, what I'm trying to say here is, you know, do what you can, at least throughout your 30s, in my opinion. And maybe once you get into your 40s, if you feel like you've done everything else, like you've done all the lifestyle factors, and it still hasn't worked. And that's what I want to talk about today, is like, what are the lifestyle factors that can influence the testosterone? We can talk about, you know, food and, you know, training, and there's some areas for supplements in there. But that's just kind of a brief overview. We can dive into it and take that anywhere you want to go. I think a fun topic that I always like to talk about, and it's, you know, when we talk about statistics, you know, sperm production has decreased, you know, I think up to 59% since the 70s. And our testosterone levels are down. I just looked up some recent statistics, 37% over the last 10 years. And so, like, how you could view that is, you know, if you're in your 20s, or the average 20 or 30 year old right now has testosterone that's similar to like a 60 year old wow. or 70 year old, you know, going back to the 80s, you know, so that is as simple as that. And so we're at a time where, you know, if you guys are paying attention to the news, I don't want to pull the news a whole lot, but we're at a time right now where, you know, child, you know, birth and, you know, reproduction, all that is actually at a slight decline. So I think it's common to think like, oh, eventually we're just gonna run to this like population overload, but you're finding that less and less people are able to be able to reproduce. And part of it, you know, is a factor of what's going on with, you know, hormones, male and female.
So with, you know, if there's a guy out there like me that's like, okay, you know, I'm interested, you know, what are those, you know, good steps I can take naturally to, you know, increase that, you know, what are some of those, like you mentioned, some lifestyle stuff and then maybe some supplements. I think starting there just makes the most sense. And then, yeah, getting it checked, kind of seeing what that does. So what are some of those things?
Yeah, I always talk about like taking inventory. And I think that like when it comes to nutrition and what you're eating, there's, you know, environmental factors that can impact your hormones or, you know, and when you're testing your testosterone, you're going to have two numbers that are really important. So you have your total testosterone number, as you've mentioned. Let's say, you know, average range, we'll say it could be between 300 and, you know, 800, 900, we'll say. And then you have your free testosterone, which that number is really important. And you're going to find some people that differentiate on what they value the most. But your free testosterone, just as it sounds, free is unbound testosterone that's actually available. And so what if you have a high testosterone or average to high and you have low free testosterone, it just shows that there's something being bound to the testosterone that you have. And, you know, what this is commonly called is your sex hormone binding globulin. And that is typically affected by, you know, hormonal issues. It could be excessive estrogen that's getting into your, you know, your diet through foods that you're eating, through environmental types of toxins. It could be stress is major, you know, so, and stress has so many different flavors to it. I mean, I think that there's the upside to stress. Like, we need stress to be able to have deadlines and get things done. But if we're living in an overstimulated state constantly, like you have your sympathetic and your parasympathetic, your sympathetic fight or flight, if you're in that state all the time, that is going to affect your sex hormone binding globulin. Mm-hmm. And then, so that will limit the amount of testosterone because it's just a stressor. And so there can be nutrient deficiencies. So the basics we want to do when we talk about the food that we're eating, you want to make sure that you're getting an adequate amount of calories is really key. So, you know, I had a client of mine who was training for, you know, he trained for like a triathlon type event, and he went for like a marathon, and then was trying to do a bodybuilding type of show. And he looked like the epitome of someone with high testosterone. And when we got his blood work checked, it was extremely low. Mm. And he knew, he said his libido was pretty much gone at that point. And the point of this is saying that, like, you may be doing all the things you feel are anabolic and like you view as like high testosterone types of activities, but your body might be telling a different story. And mm-hmm. testosterone is crucial for heart health, for for cardiovascular health, for so many other factors in the body. And the point of that is when you're overtraining, you're trying to achieve this state of being really like jacked and tan or ripped or lean or whatever. It's often not the healthiest state to be in for the body. Like when your body fat percent is too low, we'll say like sub 7% or sub 8%, that's a major stressor on your body. And you're essentially in an underfed state. You're mm-hmm. eating under what your caloric requirements are. You're at a deficit. And so just as an example, like if you're the type of person that trains 6 days a week or every day, and you're a male and you're eating under, you know, in the low 2000 calories or under 2000, it's likely that that could be having an effect on your hormones or bringing down your testosterone. And so the biggest thing is making sure that you can find out what your resting metabolic rate is, like what your, you know, calorie requirement is. I'll say like an average 180 pound man, it's, you know, around 5'10 to 6 feet tall, you know, is around 2000 calories. And so if you're active, you need to make up for that. So if you're doing something that is like 500, you know, calories of energy, you need to be eating a similar amount from a maintenance standpoint. If you're at that deficit and you're under 2000 for too long, it's just a stressor on the body. You can survive and do just fine. But if we break this down to history, we wanted a healthy body to be able to reproduce. And if our body was not in a healthy state, it had other priorities like defending ourselves or again, that fight or flight type of scenario. So, but yeah, the diet amount is really key. And then making sure you're getting, you know, I think just a baseline of protein and fat. You know, I tell, you know, people something basic like 0.7 to 1 gram of goal body weight. So if your goal body weight is 180, you know, eating 150 to 180 grams, especially if you're active, is helpful. And making sure your fat is not too low, because that plays a role in, you know, absorbing fat soluble vitamins and hormonal functions.
Yeah. So in a gram per pound of ideal body weight of protein, right, is what you're talking about. And then, yeah, what's, as far as fat goes, because, you know, the synthesis or like how your body makes testosterone starts with cholesterol. You know, that's what the hormones come from. So you want to make sure that's part of your diet too. And, you know, proteins, you know, whole proteins, like you're saying, fish, has a good amount. Eggs, red meat, right? Will help do that. But you said, so like it's a balance, right? Because you mentioned if you have too much body fat, now that's dropping testosterone. If you don't have enough, that's dropping it. So from a diet standpoint, you said like not too low of fat percentage of calories. Like what's a healthy percent of calories from fat?
Yeah, I think you can go upwards of, you know, right around like the 30% type of range. So, you know, fat is more calorically dense from like, so a gram of protein and a gram of carb is 4 calories, a gram of fat is 9 calories. So 30% fat is, you know, substantial amount more calories than 30% from protein. So to simplify that, you know, the average man, you know, on the low end should probably eat, you know, 50 to 60 grams of fat. But, you know, I think that can be upwards of, you know, 100, 150 grams or so, depending on, you know, the source and the quality. You know, getting fat from eggs is going to have other nutrients for your brain. It's going to have extra zinc in it. You got avocados and healthy fats from, different meats and proteins, and fatty fish like omega-3s all play a role. So I think crowding in those good fats, and not getting your fat from fried food is probably, helpful.
Yeah.
But again, so we said we prioritize protein and fat. If you're very active, it might sound counterproductive compared to what we hear all the time, but carbohydrates can play a big role. If you're too low carbohydrates, you can have elevated stress, elevated cortisol. Carbohydrates play a role in regulating cortisol and helping with recovery. And so, again, I think it comes down to a balance, and you can manipulate those things based on lifestyle. I think that if I was 20 pounds overweight, I would really limit the carbohydrates, especially the sugars, until you get your body, into keep it. But I mean, the same thing by prioritizing muscle on your body, it's going to improve your body composition. It's going to tend to improve your hormonal profile at the same time.
Cool. So kind of when I was asking about my main question or concern, so like normal testosterone, low free testosterone, when I can, so I think stress, what I'm just thinking for myself, I think that's for sure probably part of it. It's like just
five kids.
Taking some more time for that active recovery like we're talking about, I think will be helpful. I haven't had it tested again for quite a while, so I mean, the other thing I looked up was, I would eat walnuts at lunch every day, which I get healthy fat, but I read also like that can actually increase sex hormone binding globulin. So I cut that out and just switched to something else. But
when you look at data on like how to decrease, sex hormone binding globulin and how to increase your free testosterone, because that's something that I've helped people do and I've done that myself. There's different vitamins and minerals. So I think the essential things that also just help you live a healthier lifestyle are, start with vitamin D3. If you're not getting outside, and it's hard to do it all year round, depending on where you live. You're lucky living in Southern California, but vitamin D3, supplementing with that, I think, just finding a sufficient amount of, 5,000 international units. I like to pair it up with vitamin K2. It helps you just distribute more of the vitamin D throughout your body. But that's a hormone that plays a major role in testosterone. Zinc, and you get that from like eggs and meat often. I don't think you necessarily need to supplement with it. It's in a lot of multivitamins and, testosterone support products. Magnesium can play a role. And our soil is depleted of a lot of minerals, and that's where it has become probably more important or crucial to make sure that you don't have major deficiencies throughout what you're eating. And then a supplement that is really affordable, it's cheap to supplement, it's called boron, B-O-R-O-N. Mm. There's a lot of data. You can look up studies that show how that can help increase your free testosterone via regulation of sex hormone binding globulin. And then there's a handful of other like vitamins and supplements. Like, there's been a lot of attention with Tongkat Ali, which has been around for a long time. And so that has, an effect, like while you're taking it, it can lower your testosterone, like while you're using it, Fidoja agrestis. So those are a couple of common supplements. There's a lot of them. I mean, the supplement industry overcharges for a lot of these like testosterone, supplement formulas. So fix what you can with diet and nutrition, like really basic supplements, ashwagandha is something that can help manage stress and has been shown in some studies to help improve testosterone. But I absolutely would start with improving your diet, trying to lose some excess body fat, get good quality sleep before you go the route of, testosterone supplements, or even, definitely before you go the route of jumping on, hormone replacement. Because right now you see it's so easy to do. And you think, and people talk about, I have so much more energy and so on just by going and doing that. But there's a lot of side effects that can potentially come with that. And there's maintenance. Like, you can certainly figure it out. And I think there's people that I have clients that feel great being on it. But if you have a hair, male pattern hair baldness in your history, it can be more likely because of the increase in DHT, dihydrotestosterone, So if that is a concern of yours, keep that in mind. Some people can gain extra water weight. And then if your goal is, you know, family and trying to have kids, you know, you certainly can do it by, some people will still stay just as fertile, but often the, you know, that shutoff is going to decrease your production of sperm. And so you can come on other hormones, you know, like HCG, and there's different peptides that have been used if that's your concern. But I just see too many people getting on it too early and not taking into consideration like some of the downsides from it. And I've seen a lot of people go on it like in their late 20s or early 30s and then get off of it and take a break. So, you know, it's up to you to make that type of decision. And it's such an important factor, like having healthy testosterone, that you certainly want to address that issue. But I mean, it varies stress. If you're going like, so we talk about stress, like just different times of life, your testosterone is going to drop just by the lack of sleep and the stress in your life. And so easier said than done when we say like, oh, just manage your stress. But we certainly can influence. I think I'd like to believe that, you know, at least 50% of our perception with stress is up to us. And it takes work to be able to influence that in a different way, but through, you know, breath work and meditation and opening up and speaking. Like maybe you do have a traumatic, you have inner child issues and so on, and things that are showing up, you know, traumas that are maybe showing up and surfacing over and over again, but you can do the work. And I think it's worth doing just so you have harmony within your system.
Yeah. Love that. So yeah, I mean, we covered a lot of different things. Yeah, I think one thing that can be hard about this is it can seem overwhelming, right? It's like, oh, yeah, you know, we talked about all, you know, so many things and I'm not, you know, doing any of that, or, you know, that's seems too hard to like, you know, make sure I've got all the different, you know, minerals or fat content and protein content and all of that. So, you know, what would you say to someone that came to you like that? It's like, hey man, yeah, I listened to that podcast, but it's just like too much. I just want like one thing or like two things to start with. You know, what would you recommend there?
It's a good question. I think you want to have an ideal or visualize like the type of life that you desire to have. And I think you could go internal, do some, you know, prayer work, journaling, whatever that is, and decide what the ideal, you know, man is that you're trying to live up to. And like the first step would be just finding some, you know, maybe some mentors, even if they're from a distance, that you could model somewhat of that lifestyle. And I think you don't need to go around and check and do all this testing right away. I think you want to slowly just crowd in some lifestyle habits that you'd be proud of. And there's so many resources online. But I would say, like, you know, join a gym, or if you live in a complex that has a gym, go down there and find somebody. And I mean, it could be just striking up a conversation saying, hey, I'm new to this. Like, where would you recommend getting started? And when I say like have that model to follow, it's just something simple. Like if you're kind of lost when it comes to nutrition, like try to add in a meal per day that you'd be proud of. You know what I mean? Like go somewhere where there's fit people eating and just try to like, and you crowd that in. And then after a while, you know, master two meals a day.
Yeah.
I like that. I think you just want to educate yourself and do some testing of like how you feel. So like that's, I think, the best place to start and take inventory. I talk about that all the time, but like get out a journal and like start like, how is your energy and libido from a 1 to 5? How is your sleep from a 1 to 5? And how is your training? And if it's 0, like I don't really do much, start with walking. You know what I mean? Do what you can commit to. Don't overwhelm yourself. And then add in another session of like, it could be walk a day, like walk a mile a day, or track your steps. And then it could be, you know, join a gym and go 2 times per week type of thing. But if you take those bite-sized goals, it's easier to commit to that and stick with it for the long term. And we won't feel like a failure if you fall off. And then I would just try to build on that momentum that way. And then journal again and say like let's say 2 weeks later, I did it. And now instead of a 1 out of 5, I'm a 2 out of 5. That is enough, I feel like, to nudge you in the right way of feeling better. And you get up to a 3 out of 5 and you know, and so on. So that's my opinion, that without like going crazy and doing an overhaul.
Yeah.
The other thing is get a coach, like join a gym, get a trainer. I look at that as an investment, because the trainer, you can pick their brain. They're obviously someone that's a little bit healthier. And so if you just did like 2 or 3 sessions, you could ask them a bunch of questions, be really curious. And it's enough to at least like, I think, affect your trajectory of where your health is going.
Awesome. Yeah, I like that a lot. You know, in our program, we run about, you know, marriage and improving your marriage. Yeah, it's just such a big thing, like self-confidence. And my definition of self-confidence is, you know, self-trust, basically. Can I believe that I'm going to do what I say I'm going to do? And so to your point, you know, I don't want people to walk away from this podcast and be like, oh yeah, I'm going to do everything, and then not do any of it. And then because it breaks your self-confidence, you know, you broke a promise to yourself, it starts dropping. Oh, that'll probably drop your testosterone, right? Because you're feeling bad about yourself. But I like the idea, like, hey, just choose one meal that you can be proud of. I like that statement a lot, actually. And you know, start there, get around, like you're saying, get around people that eat fit. There's
I just want to touch on one thing really quick to that. I mean, I'm very passionate about the nutrition, the culinary nutrition side of things. Just for those of you maybe who that are a little intimidated by that, like, you can absolutely enjoy yourself with what you're eating and still get all those results. I think there's this common misnomer or stereotype that you have to deprive yourself to make these different changes. And at first, it certainly is a little bit of trial and error, but I promise you, you really like you can love what you eat and just learn how to enjoy it when you just become curious with it. So I just had to put that out there.
Yeah, no, I love that. And you actually, the book that you wrote, it's kind of about that, isn't it? Like,
yeah. So I published a book called Making Healthy Taste Good.
Yeah.
And you know, that was back, I started writing it, I think in 2016, 2017, published it in 2018, but it's still very relevant. The whole idea is getting comfortable, you know, preparing these foods and stripping it away, the intimidation that is in the way from, you know, cooking a little bit more, which I think is an essential life skill. It helps with dating, it helps with family life and energy, and be able to be self-sufficient that way. You know, and you can still make these what I call conscious comfort foods, you know, so you can make healthy ice cream and healthy pancakes and healthy things like that. That when I say, you know, healthy, subjective, you know, but it helps you express the best version of yourself, whatever that is.
Cool. Nice. Well, yeah, well, I'll link that up in the show notes too, to the book. Awesome. Well, yeah, man, thanks so much, Jason. It's been really great. You know, I learned a lot. So yeah, any kind of last words, or where people can find you?
Yeah, I mean, the like anywhere, I guess you can look at my name if I can be a resource. Jason, last name is SANI. And then we host a podcast called The Manhood Experiment. And, you know, we break all things self-development. We talk about relationships. We're really excited to have Dr. Mike on, because I got some, you know, a lot of questions I want to throw his way. But doing everything we can just to prepare people, you know, and empower people to live a healthier lifestyle and express the best versions of themselves. We dive into a bunch of fun topics. So we'd appreciate if you guys, yeah, curious, check it out.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, great. All right, Jason. Well, again, thanks so much. Great having you, and stay strong, men. And we will see you next episode.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, please leave a review on iTunes and share the episode with a friend, so we can help create stronger men and stronger marriages across the world. And if you're ready to take your strength training and your marriage to the next level, visit strongmenstrongmarriages.com to learn how. I'll see you there.